Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into the Coffee Break Podcast. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for stopping by. And typically, this is the place where you come for a new pod. But, well, something a little special here. We're going to dig back into the Halloween archives and put up both year one and year two of what has become a Halloween tradition. It's the annual paranormal investigation, or, well, really, it's a ghost hunt, right? So we're going to play for you now, year two, going back to last year, 2018. Last year marked the start of something new here at KCAP, Halloween Ghost Stories. I agreed to follow a team of paranormal investigators around the dark rooms and hallways on the third floor of the St. John's building. It's Helena's one-time hospital, now managed by Rocky Mountain Care Center. What I experienced that night and what was then found to have been recorded on my equipment was, well, it was unexplainable. So this year we had it out into the night in a new location this time, but once again, looking for things unseen. It's a chilly fall night as we head out of Helena, and as we get closer to our final destination, it's getting colder, darker, and the clouds are hugging the small mountain town of Marysville like a downfield comforter as we finally arrive. The first stop, the Red House. There are stories told in town about this house. Strange things have happened here. An apparition of a woman gliding across a room, a stereo blasting on in the middle of the night, the most terrifying. A resident waking to an unseen force pressing him down into the couch, the sensation of hands gripping his forearms. Old by typical standards, certainly not by those of the former mining town of Marysville. The Red House is unassuming from the street. It's a small two-story structure. It's not habitable now. In one of the front rooms, a portion of the ceiling being pulled by water damage and gravity toward the floor. The floor in the kitchen so weak, we're advised to avoid that room entirely. It's the lone room upstairs that winds up being the focus of our time. The slanted ceiling helping to make that room feel close, though not quite claustrophobic. Medium Michael Sweet starts asking questions. Why are you here? Are you alone? That one, upon review of the evidence, gets an answer. In fact, a couple of them. Here's the recording. The only thing altered here is the sound level after Michael's question and then some removal of background noise.
Are you the only one in this house?
So listen again. There's an immediate, confident response here, and it sure sounds like three, maybe even four, distinct whispering voices. They all say no.
Are you the only one in this house?
There are several other recordings from the house where there's clearly something there in the background. It's hard to hear without headphones. When investigator Tom Poliant Jr. asks for a name, there's a sound of some kind, a noise on my recording, and it's followed quickly by a click.
Can you tell us your name?
Paranormal researchers say that there are often sounds heard almost immediately before or after an occurrence of an EVP. The way they sound differs, but they tend to be within tenths of a second of the word or phrase and sound like a pop or a click. It's a bit, they say, like the squelch you hear as the push-to-talk button is pressed on a portable radio. So listen again. There's the sound, and then that click.
Can you tell us your name?
There's something there, but what? I don't know. But Tom believes he heard Vince or Vinny. Michael's got a tool with a giant word bank sitting next to him on the bed. The idea is that a spirit can manipulate it and choose a word to communicate. It will, he says, run sometimes for hours, not saying a thing. In fact, I've now got a similar tool, and it's been running this entire recording. Hasn't said a word. On this night, shortly after Michael sits down, it says, bed. It's where he's sitting. A few other words have come out in the upstairs of the Red House, but after Tom's question, it says Venus. Venus? Vince? It's pretty close. Add to the equation of coincidence or not this. We're told an hour or so later, when speaking with another resident, that there was someone who had previously gone into the Red House with a recorder years back. What they got? A series of whispered Vinny. A bit of post-investigation research, and turns out there was a Vinnie Kurtz living in the area back in the early 1900s. One more to add to that pile. We're joined this night by Marysville resident and author Vince Moravec. Yeah, Vince. There's not as much clear recorded evidence as was anticipated hearing those initial stories, but what does come out of the Red House, it's interesting, and it's just the start of a night that's going to end with far more than I ever expected. I'm in Marysville. It's dark, it's cold, and we're looking for ghosts. Following a team of paranormal investigators, we've already made a stop at a purportedly haunted residence in town and actually wound up with some interesting evidence and experiences. Now, we're parked outside the Marysville Cemetery. Set outside an already quiet town, it is a ghost town, after all. The cemetery, silent. Dating back to the early 1890s, the cemetery also has numerous sunken, unmarked graves. Small, brightly colored landscaping flags marking the location of some of those otherwise unmarked final resting places. But without even a slight breeze on the hill overlooking the town this night, they hang silently in the grass and sagebrush. As the group works toward the entrance to the dark cemetery, there is, it turns out, something recorded that we don't hear. Electronic voice phenomena, or EVP, is the hallmark of paranormal investigations. Starting with a cassette recorder and now moving into the digital realm, investigators will hit record, start their search, and then listen back to that recording after the fact. There are sometimes sounds or even words that weren't heard at the time but are on that recording. The prevailing theory is that spirits made up of energy themselves don't have enough power to make sounds we can actually hear, but can somehow manipulate the recording to be heard later. Sometimes, as I discover later on in this investigation, there are spoken words that intelligently respond to questions and surroundings. More often, what's recorded is evidence of something being there. It's just not distinguishable, and that's what we get here. Walking into the gate, there's what sounds like a short, clipped whisper. There's three syllables, but no matter how much cleaning, how much adjusting, it's not clear what's said, but there is something.
Yeah, there's people that are buried outside the fence.
You can hear a little bit of chattering in the background. That's us, but then there's a ta-ta-ta. What's that? That's not us. By and large, the visit to the cemetery is interesting, but there's not much in the way of recordings. Medium Michael Sweet tells me that's common at most cemeteries, incidentally. I start to work toward a back corner, and I find myself near a spot where, in the middle of sage and prairie grass everywhere, there's a bare patch of earth. Katie Thomas is part of our team and, along with fellow investigator Desiah Gillum, lives in Marysville and knows it well. On this spot, Katie says, nothing ever grows. She always feels uncomfortable in that area of the cemetery, and so I continue on my own, just past that patch, coming to the marker of Anna Mead. Born in New York, Anna was the daughter of Jeremiah and Lucinda Mead. She died in February of 1892, just 2 months shy of her 17th birthday. There's a beautiful, ornate rose cut into the top of the headstone, and I sent the recorder down in front. After a minute of standing, listening, asking if there's anyone around, it turns out a quiet cry can be heard on my recording. And last hour, we discussed precursor clicks, little noises, squelches that can be heard right before an EVP. We've got some on this one, so listen for those, and then the sound. Here it is again, this time with some noise reduction applied. This process has made the background static sound particularly digital, but it does help to isolate the sound. I move on to another marker, about 15 feet to my right. After setting my equipment down, I do actually see the meter bounce once and then settle back to zero. This is what that sound was. I didn't actually hear anything at the time, the place utterly silent. And interestingly enough, this cry has the same tone but sounds further away than the first one. Again, here it is with that noise reduction. Not hearing anything at the time, I wait a bit longer and say something along the lines of, I guess we're done, and pick up my tablet to head back. Everyone else has already worked their way out of the cemetery. There it is, though, one more time, underneath the sound of me walking and moving the recorder against the night air, one final cry. Here it is, isolated. Like the Red House earlier this night, it's interesting but not quite staggering. That's yet to come, though, as we investigate a claim of levitating bottles at the famed Marysville House, where it's now clear that you're never alone at that local fixture. Once as many as 4,000 people crammed into this small mountain town, it's not quite so busy now. The 2010 census reports 80 residents. Paranormal research has been around for a long time. In fact, Thomas Edison, the man who created the light bulb, the alkaline battery, the phonograph, found himself tinkering in the field. 98 years ago, this month, in fact, the famed inventor gave an interview for American Magazine in which he said he had been at work for some time, quote, building an apparatus to see if it is possible for personalities which have left this earth to communicate with us. Edison died in 1931, and sadly, no device or schematics have ever been found. His theory, nearly 100 years ago, seems to now be borne out in recordings we made not too many nights ago at the Marysville House. Now famous for its T-bones and friendly service, the Marysville House began life in Silver City as a station on the Great Northern Railway. The train would stop daily in the late 1800s on its way from Helena to Great Falls and then Fort Benton. The building eventually sat vacant when the train stopped running until it was moved to Marysville in 1975. It sits there still. But when Rick O'Connell moved the old depot, he may have transported more than just the building.
There were candles. They had real candles that just went flying off the tables. And what I heard was a lot of people, some people just go, ooh, that's cool. Other people went, oh, we're out of here. That's freaky.
That sort of thing hasn't been reported in some time, according to those who work there now. But according to Ginny Thomas, there are people who visit completely unaware of any stories about the place who report feeling something, some kind of energy. The night of our investigation, in fact, Ginny tells me that a woman from out of state was there. She mentioned a strange feeling in the dining room, which used to be the freight and baggage room when that building was still a train depot.
It's nothing negative. It's nothing mean or vengeful. It's just you think you're being watched.
Feelings are one thing. First-hand experiences, though, something else altogether. And Chris Boyles, a smiling, friendly bartender, has quite a story to tell. He agrees to tell me what he saw, and we sit down in the dining room. We're incidentally sitting right next to the area that patron told Jenny about earlier that night. My recorder on the table, I hit record and look up at Chris as he begins to explain what he saw about 6 months ago. A minute or so in, I happen to glance down, and there's a dialogue box popped up on my recorder. It's the box that can only appear after the button to stop a recording has been pushed. The button wasn't pushed, not by me, not by Chris, and there's no one else in the room. Weirder still, before it stopped, there were just over 32 seconds of silence recorded. Not static, complete silence. There's absolutely nothing there. Even if the external microphone somehow gets disconnected, the program shifts automatically to use the built-in onboard mic. But nothing. There's no explanation for this. Neither of these things have, in a year of use, ever happened before. So, two simultaneous confounding glitches or something else? Not wanting Chris's story to be told, maybe. That's for you to decide, I suppose. But remember that possibility when we get to our final story. Anyway, Chris and I begin. He explains his brush with the unexplained.
And there's another guy over there. And all of a sudden, the bottles just jump off the top of the top of the shelf and go over and land on the ground. There's no way it could have just fell off, because it would have had to hit the bottle in front of it to fall off. It came up and over and landed on the ground.
Ginny was there. She said she was looking away and didn't see it, but backs up Chris's story and said other people did see this.
There was a customer that was just like wide-eyed. Did you see that? Another employee was in the back. She saw it and Chris saw it. And the customer saw it.
Another time, I had my back to the bar, and a bottle of tequila came over the top and fell right behind me. It came up and just like it levitated off the thing and bounced. As soon as it came up over the top, it just dropped to the ground.
Chris is visibly animated as he's describing these incidents, words coming quickly, details precise. I'm watching his goosebumps raise on his arm. It's something that any good investigator would ask about when trying to find out if that empty room is, in fact, an empty room. About a half hour later, the bar empty? I do ask.
Did you move things on tables? Maybe behind the bar? Were you moving something?
And wait till you hear the answer, because we got one. Up until now, there have been some potential whispers, some pretty incredible coincidences, if nothing else, and a few interesting sounds. But that's nothing compared to what apparently happened in the dining room of the Marysville House. A former railroad depot in Silver City, the Marysville House now serves great drinks and hearty meals. But strange things have happened here. In the past, candles and candle holders have zipped off tables and into diners. More recently, bartender Chris Boyles, on two occasions, witnessed liquor bottles lift off the back bar, move over the front row of bottles, and then drop to the floor near the bar. I'm with a group of investigators, but none of them know what Chris told me about his experiences earlier that night. The bar and restaurant empty, the team spread throughout the dining room. Medium Michael Sweet says he believes there's a female spirit in the place. Listen as he talks about that, because there's apparently someone unseen that finds his idea interesting.
I don't think she was with the railroad. I think she was... I don't know. Definitely part of this building.
That was none of us, but there's a female sounding, But there's more here than a curious, warm-sounding spirit. Listen to what happens when investigator Tom Poliot Jr. asks for a name. This one is a bit of a shiver maker because it sounds like maybe Dave, but not a friendly, "Hi, my name's Dave." A close listen and you can hear multiple voices join in on a chorus on the long A, teaming up for the reply. So from a hum to a name, our unseen residents getting more chatty. The floorboards in this dining room are noisy. The building is, after all, 100 years old, so you can hear the creaks as I walk past Tom here to check out a back room. But you can also hear something more. This isn't Tom. It isn't me. But it's a sentence, and it's pretty surprising to hear after the fact. This is at least a third distinct voice that we've recorded at the Marysville House, but we're not done yet. Remember Chris's story of levitating bottles? I'm the only one in the building right now to have heard that story, so I join in the series of questions and ask about the incident, trying to keep it vague enough as to not fully tip off anyone else to what happened. First, the question.
You move things on tables, maybe behind the bar, were you moving something?
We leave a long break here where no one's talking, no one's moving, at least none of us that drove to Marysville that night, because there seems to be a conversation during that period of waiting, at least two voices. Here's the whole sequence following my questions. There seems to be one voice, a response from another, and then an answer. There's a lot to break down on this one, so we're going to take it one bit at a time. The first whisper, it's really fast, and that makes it hard to decipher, but researchers say that there are EVP recordings that come in either faster or slower than would be normal for someone to speak. So I slow down the recording, and words come out. Here it is again, a bit cleaned up, and at 85% original speed. She's going to touch the thing. Which might make sense when you figure in the fact that there's a tool sitting on a table that, as we've mentioned in a previous story this morning, has a giant word bank. The idea is that spirits can manipulate it to get a word of their choosing. Keep that in mind. Now, the response. Here it is on its own. A bit rougher sounding, not as young. Honestly, a bit intimidating. She better not. Then the answer to that. Again, cleaned up, slowed down a bit, and you can hear she's gonna touch it. Then a second later, this happens. That word bank, after I ask about the moving of the bottles at the bar, says, "Joke." And the conversation continues. Here's some talk between Michael and Tom right after that, and there's what sounds like that first whisperer saying something in the break, though it's not clear just what.
Joke.
What was it?
My thing just said joke.
I follow up with another question. There's a reply from a raspy, admittedly a little intimidating, unseen force.
How many times did you move things with Chris here?
I think that says I didn't see it but once. Before we leave, Michael's wondering if we're bothering the female spirit that he sensed there. She seems, he says, to be the one taking care of the place and potentially keeping other less friendly inhabitants in line. Katie says that she doesn't feel like we are, but something there that night seemed intent on causing trouble, because while we might not have been bothering her, something seems willing to take that job on. Check this out. It's there, and it's there twice. I can.
No. Okay. So we're not bothering her? Good. I didn't feel like she was.
So, some troublemakers at Marysville House, apparently. That said, there was seemingly multiple intelligent responses to questions asked of the spirit believed to be the in-charge female. An EMF detector measures changes in the electromagnetic field. Paranormal researchers believe that when a spirit gets close, it sets the machine off. That machine sat in the dining room, largely silent, except following a handful of questions and comments like this one.
You're more than welcome to stay here. This is a beautiful place to be. You take care of everybody in here, okay?
Some kind of response? Again, you'll have to decide that for yourself, but you've heard the evidence. And if you ask me, you're never really alone at the Marysville House. I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Coffee Break, brought to you by News Radio 95 KCAP. Be sure to swing back by on Monday for another fresh pod.